the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And as you know, these shows are special because as I'm kind of bumping in and out of town, working on this TV series, soon to be officially announced TV series, and now about to head off to go to Dracula's Castles. It's kind of hard to come in here and try to catch up a little bit, and you know, you get a little rusty after a while, but it's good to at least have some kind of new content, new updates on what's happening. And I think once this new TV show comes out, this radio show is just going to go bonkers, because it's going to play beautifully together. Here in the studio with producer Forrest Connor, we have investigator Shelley Wright. And so I don't know if you want to talk about this at all, Forrest, but you may have seen a UFO recently.
Maybe. I'm convinced it was something terrestrial, but other people that were with me are convinced it might have been something else.
Mm-hmm. What do you think it might have been?
I thought it might have been a blimp.
Mm-hmm. And it was here in Asheville.
It was.
Just because it was moving slowly?
Well, it's moving slowly in the shape it was. It's like, I guess...
Cigar-shaped
craft, silver, but...
We know people who say that some UFOs disguise themselves as clouds.
True.
I'm not sure how you tell the difference at that point. It becomes very complicated. But, you know, we're talking a little bit about conspiracies this hour. Friend of ours, Brad Steiger, and his wife Sherry Steiger, just released a second edition of their book, Conspiracies and Secret Societies, The Complete Dossier. At some point, I'll get him on the show. He's been on the show numerous times. I hate to plan people with this erratic schedule I'm on right now, because I can't guarantee that we'll be able to get them on when we need them until things get a little more normal. But there is sort of a conspiracy that's been around for a while, that NASA found life on Mars years ago. And this story kind of crops up here and there, and there are folks who say, hey, you know, they're covering up certain analysis. Well, here's a story from Discovery.com that came out while I was out of town. And the headline is, Mars Viking robots found life 36 years ago. You're like, huh? Really? Is this a serious story? And it's kind of difficult to understand this from a layman's perspective, but they're claiming that they are reanalyzing that data. And let me tell you what I'm talking about here. I'll just read some of this verbatim. New analysis of 36-year-old data, resuscitated from printouts and whatnot, shows NASA found life on Mars. An international team of mathematicians and scientists conclude in a paper published. They further say NASA does not need a human expedition to Mars to nail down the claim. Neuropharmacologist and biologist Joseph Miller with the University of Southern California Keck School of Medicine told Discovery News, quote, the ultimate proof is to take a video of Martian bacteria. They should send a microscope and watch the bacteria move. But on the basis of what we've done so far, I'd say I'm 99% sure there's life there. Quote. So this guy, who apparently is a real scientist, says he's 99% sure they have reanalyzed the data using some type of mathematical formula, and they claim that they can look at the geologic information and tell if it's been affected by something biological. And so, you know, obviously the idea of life being found somewhere out there, even if it's microbial, is huge. And it's weird to see that, you know, there are apparently serious scientists who are saying, you know, without seeing one actually squiggling around, we're almost 100% sure that there is life on Mars. So what does that mean for the idea that UFOs are flying around? I don't know. But in this book, Conspiracies and Secret Societies, The Complete Dossier, which is a big, thick, heavy book, you know, you can flip through and just, like, put your finger down somewhere and find a topic and read about conspiracies. Like here, boom, Nikola Tesla, the genius and the aliens, about the work he was doing with aliens, or the Trilateral Commission, or Marilyn Monroe, you know. I kind of believe there was something fishy about the whole Marilyn Monroe deal, because, you know, when you're messing around with the president and the attorney general like that, and, you know,
you might talk.
Yeah, a little pillow talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's possible she knew too much. And then, of course, look what happened to Kennedy. Anytime there's an assassination or somebody gets killed, you know, there are people who kind of doubt what went on. And so I mentioned Bin Laden because it was around a year ago when Bin Laden was killed by the Navy SEALs. And in this book that Brad Steiger put out here, he says, a big problem is that the official reports of Bin Laden's assassination had to lay in the fact that no photographs of his body were made available to the media. Adding to doubts of Bin Laden's death was his burial at sea. Skeptics around the world demanded to see his body as the ultimate proof he was truly dead. Then they go on to talk about the discrepancies in the reports of the shootout at the mansion by the SEALs. And how also afterward the neighbors who were interviewed and people who were there in the area, they had mixed witness accounts of how all this went down. I don't know, but recently I was talking to a guy, a decorated veteran, and he told me that the number one reason he thinks there was something fishy about all that is that, as some of you may recall, just a few months after this all went down, a helicopter was shot down over Afghanistan. And it says here in this report I'm reading in the LA Times that when that helicopter was shot down, that incident was the largest number of American troops killed in a single day in the war. And that helicopter included, let's see here, how many? They say there were 30 Americans who died, nearly two dozen were Navy SEALs, including those who were with SEAL Team 6, the unit that conducted the Bin Laden raid. And obviously, everything about SEAL Team 6 is very secretive anyway. It has to be. But it is odd that, like, right after this happens, a bunch of the SEAL guys are killed in the most, you know, the most violent incident in Afghanistan. Now, you're shaking your head, Shelley, like you think there's something fishy about
this. Everything that you've said. Yes, I always thought that the whole thing was very fishy. And everything that you said, yes. And you know, when the helicopter was shot down, yeah, or whatever the crap was, that did it for me.
Well, I remember just after the whole thing with this whole Bin Laden thing went down, I know a guy that has done a couple tours over in Afghanistan and one in Iraq, and I asked him what his thoughts on what went down were. He's like, well, what the media is telling us is total bunk,
okay,
to put it nicely. And he gave me a totally different story of what happened and what the situation was. I think I even started to tell you about it.
Refresh us.
Basically, he said that that there was no big plan to go get them. What happened is that these guys were coming back from a mission and happened to be shot down in the middle of this cornfield, wheat, some kind of field, and they were on their way back to the main the main city there or whatever to get help, and they just happened upon this place where they came out and they were being fired at, and of course they fired back in return, and just happened upon that there was no big conspiracy to get Bin Laden there. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time, so to speak. And there was no, like, Barack Obama ordering them to go in and get him. But it just happened, and once they realized what happened, of course, the big cover-up started.
Well, apparently, Fox News claims here that a former U.S. attorney named Michael Mukasey told Sean Hannity that the Navy SEAL mission to kill Osama bin Laden was preceded by a, quote, highly lawyered memo, end quote, from CIA Director Leon Panetta. And this memo was designed to insulate President Barack Obama if the operation failed. And he's claiming that they had a fallback plan, that it was going to be blamed on McCraven. And let's see, Admiral Bill McCraven was the special operations commander. So if that's true, it would show that they did intend to get bin Laden, but they had a plan, if it failed, to blame it, you know, on this other guy instead of the president.
Right.
So I don't know. You know, it's like when you talk to people like Jim Mars, you get into this area where it's like they know they can't keep a secret, so they put out 10 different versions of the truth, and then you don't know what to believe once you start looking into all of it, and you finally just get exasperated and throw up your hands. But it's a good one. I mean, and it's one I'd love to actually ask Jim Mars. We haven't had him on the show since this happened. We need to get Jim Mars on, and he would enlighten us, wouldn't he?
He would indeed.
Yeah. Jim is the walking encyclopedia. Shelley, what's your favorite conspiracy?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. Please let me think about it, because there are so many.
I've always been fond of the fluoride conspiracy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, you can look and find scientifically that, you know, fluoride, it kind of dumbs you down.
It's susceptible to advertising.
Yeah. And, you know, they have used fluoride compounds in, like, for mental drugs, depression drugs, and things like that, because it kind of dulls the senses. And yet, we have tons of it in the water in this country. Okay, it's already time for a break. When we come back, we're going to dig into a lot of the weird news that's been going on. We have a headline here about a little girl who fell into the grease pit at Sonic. That sounds fun. New reports from a pilot about UFOs in Arizona. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Right about now. The Funk Soul Brother, check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother, right about now. The Funk Soul Brother, check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother, right about now. The Funk Soul Brother, check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother, right about now. The Funk Soul Brother, right about now. About now. About now. About now.
That's the show where we dig into all kinds of mysterious stuff, weird things that are happening in the world, especially here in the year 2012. broadcasting from the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's called Speaking of Strange. I am Joshua P. Warren. Always plenty of stuff to just, you know, catch up on. I love the fact that now, I mean, you can just jump on the internet anytime you want and find that so much weird stuff is happening. It's almost like mainstream news anymore. It's hard to tell the difference. We were talking some about conspiracies. Often China is involved in conspiracies because China has such a control, you know, over their people. Even the amount of information they can access on the internet and how they live their lives personally, and it's a little spooky to think that so many, you know, people, millions of, well, I'm sure, but how many people are in China? Over a billion, right? Something like that. A lot of people are so controlled. And I saw this photo, and I guess it appears that it's real. A photo sort of got somehow leaked, or it appeared on the internet, of an entire class of Chinese high school students. And they're sitting there cramming for exams. And as they're doing that, every single one of them is on an IV drip. And so, yeah, and the question is, what the heck is China giving to their students while they're studying? What is this IV drip? So, anyway, it appears, if this story is accurate here, and it looks like it, from what I can tell, it is. Now, there are wires installed above the desks for these IV drip dispensing bottles, and the director there of the Office of Academic Affairs claims that it's true, but all they're doing is delivering amino acids to the students intravenously to help restore their health as they work. Quote, the state grants a subsidy for amino acids to each graduating senior. Any student that feels not well can take amino acids off the IV drip. He went on to say that some students had been below par recently due to sudden weather changes in the city, and that the school infirmary had been packed with students, so in order to just spare them the trouble of running back and forth, they arranged these IV drip sessions in the classroom while they're working. And it's creepy.
He really believes this?
Right. It reminds me of, like, the Nazi mentality of creating, like, super people. You know, what are they really pumping into their kids over there now?
Yeah.
If that happened in America, oh, man, people would flip out.
Well, that leads me to my conspiracy theory that we were talking about earlier. The flu vaccinations, H1N1.
Yeah.
You know, everybody talks about getting flu shot, but, you know, within the last couple of years, especially it seems like last year, everybody was pushing it. The media, oh, you have to get the shot. You have to get it. You have to protect yourself. And all of a sudden, it's available in, you can get a shot at the grocery store. You know, it was really too much. But then I had heard the president's not allowed to have that vaccination.
Oh, really?
And his kids aren't, and his wife isn't, and members of Congress and the Senate and their aides, they're not allowed to have it. Well, if they aren't, I don't want it.
Well, if the president can't get it and his kids can't get it, yeah, that's very fishy. I didn't know that. Okay, come over here and look at this picture. This is the picture. There's actually a series of pictures, and you can see, these are the Chinese students. We'll see if we can get this up at speakingofstrange.com. Look, they each have their own little bag over their heads, and you can see how they've got it rigged up here in the classroom. And they're just sitting around, you know, nonchalantly working, going about their routine with this thing stuck in their arm.
Creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, they're creating some kind of little robot kids over there.
Because you know the Chinese are always worried about, you know, the health and well-being of their citizens.
Yeah. So I don't know what they're up to over there. Plenty of food for conspiracy, though. Get your stockpiles ready. I haven't seen the show Doomsday Preppers, but I've heard that it's pretty interesting. And, of course, some people from this area, I think, are being included on that.
And I think they come into the shop, too.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
What have you heard?
Well, you have a lot of preppers that come into the shop. I mean, they don't just... It's not just, you know, food and weapons and things like that that they prepare for, but they also stockpile precious metals.
Yeah, well, I can see why. Phoenix, Arizona. Private pilot reports multiple objects south of Phoenix. Here we go, Phoenix again. Site of the notorious Phoenix Lights. It says a private pilot flying westbound there reported unidentified objects moving northbound on May 5th. He took some pictures, they say. I got to find these pictures, I suppose. It says they were brilliant, silver, metallic-looking, reflecting sunlight. This was during broad daylight. It reminds me some of the Kenneth Arnold situation, which kind of kicked off the whole flying saucer craze in 1947. Private pilot saw a bunch of shiny little objects flying around Washington State and said that it looked like they were skipping like saucers across a pond, is how he described it, and that's where the term flying saucers came from. Maybe it's one of those things. More weird news. We're just going to go through the stack a little bit here. Yeah, headline that kind of makes you cringe. Child falls into fast food grease pit. I know I shouldn't be chuckling as I read this. At Sonic, Clarksville, Tennessee. Now, I know you envision all kinds of scenarios when you hear that. It says here, two local parents are considering legal action, I bet, against a fast food giant after their daughter fell into a vat of grease steps away from the restaurant's patio. Five-year-old Lily, I won't give her a name since she's five, but five-year-old fell into the buried grease trap at the Sonic after dinner there and was engulfed in grease. Says the vat is under landscaping that is a few feet from the tables and chairs on the patio there and is covered by a round disc that just sort of subtly jumps out of the mulch. There's a little warning on the disc that says, do not enter, poison gas. And that cover was dislodged when Lily fell in. And it says here her father, Michael, couldn't even see his daughter through the grease. His baby just disappears into a vat of grease outside Sonic. And so, anyway, he's reaching in, trying to find her. Finally, he saw her hand jet up, and he grabbed a hold of it, pulled her out, of course. They took her immediately to the hospital. They said that aside from grease in her ears, that miraculously, she's physically fine.
Okay.
I wouldn't have been, like, chuckling if this girl had been, like, burned up in the fryer or something like that. But, yeah, she's fine. She just had one of these Willy Wonka experiences where you fall into an aspect of the machinery, if you will, and they say that she's shaken by the incident.
An Augustus Gloop moment?
Yeah, there you go, an Augustus Gloop moment. So now they're worried about the long-term effects. I bet she smelled fantastic, though.
I just want to know, did the father have to really hold on or to her hand, like, without her slipping out?
You know, Forrest, you know what this reminds me of?
I know what you're going to say.
It's the story that you always tell about you falling into a vat of ketchup.
Yes.
Yeah.
It happens.
Mm-hmm. Which I still have never seen proof of that. I've never seen a newspaper article. And I tell you what, if anybody out there finds a newspaper article about...
Oh, look at that. It's time for a break.
A 14-year-old Forrest Connor falling in ketchup, I'll send you a nice prize in the mail. When we come back, if you have a fear of clowns, then this one's gonna creep you out. probably. It's a little spooky. And some kids are just horrified, but I know a lot of adults who are as well. So, I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Don't touch that dial. This is Speaking of Strange, the program where the unusual becomes usual, keeping you company tonight. Thank you for spending your evening with us. Place to relax, hang out, and just kind of get the scoop on all the strange stuff happening around the world. Of course, the last hour of this show we call the Dark 30 Hour. Coming up before you know it, and that's when we get into some of the stuff that's a little more controversial, outrageous, offensive, the late-night material, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So I get the impression, Shelley, that you, you're a little freaked out by clowns. Is that true?
Well, I'm fine with clowns. I don't really feel one way or the other, you know.
Right.
Poke one in the eye, really see how scary they are. I'm okay with it.
Sounds like you've dated a few. Forrest, do clowns bother you?
Yes, I hate them.
Really?
I do.
I don't like clowns either. I don't think they're funny.
No.
I don't know why they even exist. I don't know why they ever existed.
No.
To scare little kids.
Well, it seems like they do a good job at that. And,
I mean, every time you see videos of a clown at a birthday party, there's always kids that are crying that and don't want anything to do with this clown.
Yeah. And I don't want to offend anybody listening who happens to be a clown.
Right.
But I don't...
Not all clowns are serial killers.
Well, once in a while.
Once in a while.
Yeah. I'm just not... I know it probably takes a lot of talent and skill to do what they do, but...
I mean, yeah, bring to what Shelley said is, like, you know, that one picture of John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah.
Dressed up as a clown.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That'll do it. Yeah. Well, okay, if you have any sort of dislike or fear related to clowns, I want you just right now to just conjure up in your mind the most terrible, like, grimacing, like, evil, sharp-toothed, just freaky-looking clown that you can imagine. Because there is a clown out there who looks just like that. I mean, this is a scary, creepy-looking clown. It's a very visual show tonight. I'll have to see how much of this stuff we can post on our speakingofstrange.com site. His name is Dominic DeVille, and he is pioneering a field here. As far as I know, he's the one and only. I think he's kind of sick. He came up with this idea. He, for a fee, will, as an evil birthday clown, torment your child for 7 days. 7 days leading up to an attack. And here's how it starts out, okay? He starts by sending, like, leaving little notes for them saying, I'm coming for you, you know, and sending texts and letters. And then, like, you know, the kid will go out at playtime, and then they'll just see him working somewhere off the corner of the school property. Or if they go out with their friends, I mean, they come home at night, and they get in bed, and there's a little note like, only 3 more days, you know, that sort of thing. And then finally, on the 7th day, this guy, I mean, wearing this freaky clown mask, at some point will indeed attack. When the time is right, he will spring out from somewhere and go, rah! And he will smash a cake in the kid's face.
That is evil!
And this sounds like something Demented Patty might do to her child. I don't know. Do you think Demented Patty...
No.
Would she even enjoy this?
No, I don't think she would enjoy that.
I don't know.
No.
I don't know. now that she knows, we'll have to talk her into this.
Sounds like fun. Does he have, like, people he hires out to do these things also?
I think he puts all of his effort into it and just does it personally. He says, and I'm just reading from the Huffington Post here, he harasses them with texts, phone calls, and letters day after day to let them know their time is coming. And they say that, you know, obviously the parents can stop this at any point, but that, quote, most kids absolutely love being scared senseless, end quote. This guy, who was originally a Swiss actor, said that he got this idea from just watching some of his favorite horror movies. So if you think movies like Stephen King's It are scary or whatever, a lot of people think about that one, then you'll understand how terrible this would be. You could never do this to me. I would shoot him, probably.
I was going to say, you can only do this to school kids because people like us would shoot them.
Yeah. If there's if a clown is haunting me for 7 days,
day two, I'm packing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I might even, I'd maybe even alert the cops, like, guys, I might be about to shoot a clown. I'm just giving you a heads up.
Just saying.
Hopefully you can prevent this from happening. But don't, you know, this actually seems like something you could really take to that next level, though, and stalk people this way on a very, like, vengeful level.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's called the evil birthday clown, stalking your kid for a fee. If your kid doesn't have enough to talk about in therapy already, up the ante a little bit. Here's a story from Chinatown, Boston. A woman apparently gave scammers $160,000 and is now complaining that they hypnotized her into giving it to them. Wow. I want to meet those hypnotists. Because if a guy, you know, I'm going to give away one of my golden ideas here. If you can find a really good hypnotist, all you need to do is hire that guy to hypnotize you into being the best golfer ever. Because anybody can hit a ball, pretty much.
True.
Now, I'm not a big golfer, as you know. You've seen me play golf. I'm lucky if I hit the ball at all.
I'm in the same boat as you are there.
But it seems like the reward for hitting that ball, if you can do it well, is so monumental. To me, it's got to be like the easiest sport you could physically do for the amount of money you get, right?
Yeah.
I mean, unless you want to consider like playing poker a sport, which... But anyhow... this woman says she gave him $160,000. So I wonder, how did this happen, right? Because a lot of times I don't like read these stories in depth before I come in here. I see a headline, I'm like, let's find out what this story is live on the air. So anyway, says here she was approached Okay, this is a woman hypnotist approached by a woman who, quote, started asking random questions about the victim's family members. And after the encounter, the victim said she went home with a bag given to her by this other lady. She filled it with $160,000 worth of jewelry and then walked out and handed it to the woman at an agreed-upon location. And later, the woman now says she's realizing that she had been hypnotized in order to do this. And it claims here also in this story, in 2009, a convenience store owner in New Hampshire was tricked by thieves who he said hypnotized him before making off with $1,000. So this is something that happens more, you know, that police in Boston say this kind of thing has happened numerous times.
Well, I've been around a few hypnotists as well as you have, and everything I think I hear all of them say is that you cannot be hypnotized to do something that you don't want to do.
That's what they tell you.
I mean, I don't know if that's just something they tell you.
Right.
Or if it's something that's actually...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because there's no way legally they could admit otherwise.
Right.
Because then, you know, you're going to blame them for something. Have you ever been hypnotized, Shelley?
Yes.
Okay, what was the scenario? What was the situation?
I had writer's block, and it was just a way of, trying to, you know, get past that block. But I was perfectly conscious of everything. I mean, I never did anything that I didn't want to do. I mean, it wasn't like being asleep. I don't really know how to explain it. It was just very normal. And if this hypnotism thing works for making people do what they don't want to do, then why aren't telemarketers using it?
Maybe they don't have the special skill. Maybe they're, you know, maybe it's vampires that can do this. Remember, Shelley?
Oh, yes.
Glamoured.
See, I've been warning you about that. You're going to go over there to Transylvania, and some sleek vampire guy is just going to look you right in the eyes, and the next thing you know, you're going to be in a sack somewhere, in a trunk, heading off to some ruins where you'll be turned into a vampire slave. And I don't think it'll work on me, however, because I'm partially undead.
Partially undead.
Yeah, it's a long story. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you why a woman beat her husband up pretty badly with a vacuum cleaner. It's a weird reason, but maybe some of you ladies will understand. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. Everybody listening out there, I've got a little trivia question for you. See, one of the guys I'm working with on this new TV show His name is Aaron Sagers. He's actually the host of the program. And he and I have we have become friends for a number of reasons, one being that we're about the same age, and Aaron is one of the top experts on pop culture in the country. So after a long day of shooting, Aaron and I would go out to a bar, sit there and drink beer, and then like quiz each other about pop culture. And it was he's a fun friend to have. And so, anyway, somehow or other, the movie Boogie Nights came up. And if you've ever seen Boogie Nights, there's a scene where Dirk Diggler, toward the end of the movie, he's all washed up. He's trying to become a singer. And he's singing this song in the studio. And so Aaron, and I'm doing a pretty good job of answering his pop culture questions, and he's pretty darn mean. I only stumped him like once or twice. He goes, "Where did that song come from?" And I thought, well, I just assumed that was original to Boogie Nights. And he's like, "Oh, come on, Josh. Don't disappoint me, man. It's a cheesy 1980s song. You've got to know this." So he's really putting all this pressure on me. And I was like, I can't let this slide, you know, I've got... And I sat there for like 20 minutes. And I came up with all these different guesses. And finally, I gave up. I couldn't get it, man.
Don't you hate admitting defeat like that?
Yes. Now, would you have known, Forrest?
No.
Really?
No, I probably wouldn't.
That makes me feel better, then. So, Shelley, it came from an animated feature film in the 80s.
You got the touch. I don't know.
You got the power.
Animated feature film?
Yeah. Okay, you don't get it either.
I don't know.
Do you have a guess?
No.
All right. Well, I know in the chat room right now, somebody's probably, like, about to get it. Maybe they have already.
Oh, they have. We have smart listeners.
This originated from Transformers, the movie. And who's the artist here, Forrest, do you recall?
Stan Bush.
Stan Bush. You got the touch. So that we would have all missed that then. Okay.
No. I never saw it, so I don't feel quite so bad.
So that's a really good trivia question.
I remember the teasers or the previews when Transformers the movie came out. Do you remember the teasers?
No, or the, I don't the remember one the big,
does Optimus Prime die? That's the one big question that's going on that. Like, you were sitting at the movie theater or on TV watching during your daily cartoons, uh-huh. And the previews for this movie comes on, and it's like, Autobots and the Decepticons battle each other in the ultimate battle. Does Optimus Prime die?
Optimus Prime. Well, so there we go. A little fun trivia for those of you who are in your 30s, 40s. I think the youngest you might be to pick up on that would be like, you know, your early 30s or in the latest your early 40s. That's kind of the generational range. But the cool thing about Aaron, like I said, you can sit there and pick his brain and be like, okay, what came on CBS on Saturday mornings between noon and 1 p.m. that aired back to back, you know, that sort of thing.
That was Looney Tunes.
No.
Looney Tunes show, wasn't it?
No.
What was it?
It was in what year? I will say 1981. 1982?
81, 82. Oh, my Lord.
It was The Lone Ranger and then Tarzan. Yeah. So, anyway, that's the kind of crap that you talk about drunk in a bar at night. And Aaron and I love it. Just sit there like we're on top of the world talking about this kind of stuff. So, story here from Easton, Pennsylvania. Apparently, police were called to a home, and about 4:13 p.m. on a Sunday, and they found a man. I don't think they say how old he was, but I'm assuming he might be around 50 because of the age of the attacker. But anyway, they found him outside. He was red, scratched, bruised. His shirt was torn all up. I mean, he'd had a rough day. And they said, what happened to you? And he said, my wife did this to me. Says, she pulled out the vacuum cleaner. She pulled one of the pieces off of it. And she beat me with it until it broke. And then she continued with her hands and everything else that she could get a hold of. And the police said, what in the hell happened in there? And he says, well, she didn't like the style of my facial hair. I went and I shaved and, you know, she came out and she said, are you kidding me? That's horrible. Now, the thing is, in the story, they don't explain what he did. Was this a porn stash or, a 1970s cop porn stash? Well, I mean, what would make you flip out on a man facially speaking, Shelley? You're speechless over this
comment? I don't prefer facial hair, so I don't know.
He did something that she didn't like.
Obviously.
When we come back, it's going to be the Dark 30 Hour, when we talk about the more controversial and often offensive topics, not for the kiddies. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.